10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Watchman's Cry, News from the Wall, your source for the truth and what's really happening today.
Hello, my friends. Nathan Liao here, and you're listening to the Watchman's Cry, News from the Wall, the program where we examine events in the light of biblical prophecy and through the lens of truth and spiritual focus. If you're taking notes, the website is watchmanscry.com. Well, here we are, folks. Obama 2.0 has now arrived in the United States of America. What is it going to mean? Is Obama 2.0 going to be a benign 4 years that will just visit America for a short season and then go away? And then after that, we'll have Hillary or Biden? Will we even make it that far? What do you think, folks? 2016 is 4 years away. And in 4 years, how much is gasoline going to cost? How much will a box of cereal cost? Will Sears, Roebuck, and Company still be in business? Will your local shopping mall still have its doors open? Will the recovery finally be here? And will there be parades of confetti that sing the song, Happy Days Are Here Again? Ladies and gentlemen, in 2016, will we still be alive? Will the citizens of America be free? What do you think, folks? Do you think you will be free in 4 years from now? Will the many listeners of this program still be planning for the quote-unquote doom to arrive? Or will many of us be wishing that we could wake up from the nightmare that we are experiencing? What do you think, my friends? What will life be like in America in 4 years? Is Obama going to finish his 4 years and then leave his office willingly? I ask those questions so that those of you listening can think about them. Based on what I see right now in the distant horizon, I expect to see some disturbing things take place here in America. I expect to see the man of mystery involved in some of the things that are going to take place. The man of mystery, the anomaly, that strange, unknown, and veiled secretive puzzle of a man. He is, folks. He's an enigma who seems to be unaccountable, not very transparent, and in my opinion, very deceptive. He's the man of mystery, folks. Nathan, I thought this was a Christian program. Why are you talking about our president? I am talking about our president because he has passed, is passing, and is going to continue to pass legislation that's going to affect your life. The life of your loved ones. It's going to affect the culture of the United States, and it's going to affect the culture of many parts of the world. So on this program, we're going to examine and take a look at past history to see if we can glean from any parallels. We're going to discuss the recent inauguration ceremony, and I'm going to share what I believe just happened behind the scenes in the spiritual realm. Because on Inauguration Sunday, on January the 20th, 2013 at high noon, and then the very next day on Monday, some very powerful spiritual weather arrived over America. And this weather occurred in the realm of the unseen dimension, and its arrival was loud. And folks, did you sense it when it occurred? Did the radar of your spirit and of your heart make a notation that something was amiss on those days? And to those who have the ears to hear, let them hear. And to those who have the spirit to discern, let them discern. This event is happening in the spiritual realm, in the invisible realm. It has not been reported on C-SPAN or even on Drudge. It's time to discern, folks. It's time for the people of God to have their spiritual senses raised up and awakened to discern these things that are happening. Because, folks, right now, there's a barge of toxic spiritual waste that has arrived. I'm not saying these things to strike fear in those of you that are listening. I'm saying this to announce and to warn to those who have the ears to hear. Because folks, when Hitler became the Chancellor of Germany in January of 1933, he was also imparted with clever and crafty entities of evil from hell's underworld. And because of this spiritual impartation that he received, Hitler was able to accomplish decrees, mandates, and legislation that defied sanity. And over the past 80 years, how many have asked the question out loud? How was Hitler able to do what he did? And how many people are willing to admit that Hitler had the help of demonic spirits and fallen angels of evil craftiness and deception and wicked genius? And out of those who are brave enough to visit those words of truth, how many are willing to look at Hitler's dark accomplishments and then set a plumb line and measure other world leaders with the same suspicions or vigilance? I know that today's history teacher will not tell you this. And if it happened in the past, could it happen again? How incredible is it, folks, that here we are 80 years later, and I find myself very concerned. I believe everyone listening to this program needs to be very concerned. Because right now, America's leadership is presently experiencing a close encounter of a bizarre kind. Likewise, today's scribes of the media are not telling you this. They are not exposing it. They are not sharing it with the world. And sadly, they are not doing their job. Why? Why is America's leadership experiencing some bizarre behavior and most people are not aware of it or concerned about it? Why is that, folks? Here's why. Because they're spiritually handicapped and because they're blind themselves. But nevertheless, the gears are turning, the wheels are spinning, and the levers are being positioned for the next phase of the plan. Because there are plans. God has His divine plan, and it is a plan that then trickles down to the hearts of men with their plans and schemes in this end game. And today, I'm going to touch on several of these categories because in so doing, then we can be challenged to nourish our plans. And I know that I ask this question a lot. What's your plan, my friend? Is your plan in motion yet? Have you sent your plan to God? Have you submitted your plan to God for approval? Are you still trying to figure it out? Is your plan based on Scripture or is it based on assumption? Nathan, man, you ask a lot of questions. I know, folks. I'm trying to encourage the process of godly counsel and consideration. And I'm doing it to hopefully stir you up to seek God's will. Because, ladies and gentlemen, that's the bottom line. Walking in God's will keep you in His light. And all of us, as the children of God, as the people of Christ, the bottom line is that we can find God's will and walk in it. Because if we can find God's will and proceed on His path, you will be able to maintain yourself in His light. But walking outside of God's will is going to be like stepping into nowhere. Now, folks, think about that. If you are pursuing plans that are not part of His will, you are going to be stepping into darkness. And when a person steps into darkness, they're stepping into nowhere. Nowhere comforting, nowhere safe, and nowhere to find rest. And my friends, my summary is that your future days will be accomplished with a challenge to stay safe. And while doing it, that you will also be walking in God's peace and in God's rest. Or in other words, you will not be wrought in confusion or fear or panic. If you're in God's will, you're going to have assurance that you will be in good mental health, as opposed to the opposite, which in layman's terms I call freaking out. So this is why I talk about what's going on in the world. This is why I talk about politics. This is why I talk about current events in the light of Scripture and in the light of how it affects you in these end times. So I want to invite you to please get a pen and paper and your Bible, and please take notes, folks. Take the challenges that I may visit and you discuss them with your loved ones. If you're married, discuss them with your husband or your wife. Discuss them with your friends and your family. Folks, right now is when we need to be talking about these things. Don't wait. waiting till next week or next month is not going to do you any favors. The longer you wait, the harder the situation is going to become. So today we're going to talk about the next 4 years. We're going to talk about the coming future. We're going to talk about some things that are occurring in the spiritual realm. Share this program with everybody that you know, friends, family, spiritual leaders. Folks, the clock is ticking. Some very, very pivotal events are approaching us right now, like a tidal wave, like a tsunami, like a bullet train. The next 4 years has begun. And in those 4 years, I expect to see new challenges arise for all of us. I expect to see Obama become a thorn in our sides, folks. And while that begins to transpire, we must also behave like mature men and women of God as we encounter his splinters. And this is why I'm here today, to share with you a strategy of spiritual determination and survival. By the way, folks, do these messages help you? Do they help to prompt you with provoking thought that challenges you to make positive plans for your life? Do these messages make a difference to you? If you've been listening to them long enough, you know they're different. And you know this ministry is different. And it's not the policy of this watchman, me, to regurgitate the same stuff that is already being spoken about out there in internet land. My policy is to seek for information from the heart of God, from the Holy Spirit, to challenge you and to help you and to comfort you and to bring hope to you and your family so that you will be able to endure what's coming. That's what makes Watchman's Cry different, folks. And this ministry survives because people like you realize that we are different and you appreciate our efforts. So if you do, my friends, we appreciate and we need your love gifts of support. So ask God about helping to bless this ministry. We have some projects that we are doing, and I'm also going to mention in a moment. So I want to thank you in advance. The hour is very late, folks, so make your blessing count. Our address is Watchman's Cry, P.O. Box 157, Priest River, Idaho, 83856. Or you can go to our website and contact us there. Now, I want to make a quick announcement. If you happen to live near the Priest River area of Idaho, here in our little mountain town, we have been having fellowship meetings. And if any of you live in the Spokane area or Coeur d'Alene area, Sandpoint, if you're interested in joining us possibly for one of these Saturday night meetings, please email us. You can go to watchmanscry.com and go to the contact link. And if you would like to attend one of our meetings, and at this moment in time, we have limited seating. So please contact us if you're interested and let us know how many people you have so that we don't have an overflow problem. By the way, I'm very excited about this fellowship that we've been having because we have a time of worship. We have a time of fellowship. We share the word and we also discuss what time it is. If you are hungry for fellowship, I have been visiting with and meeting with remnant like-minded believers here in the area, and there is nothing like worshiping with the saints. So we're going to do it as long as the Lord leads, and we'll go from there. Now, let's go ahead and get started, folks. As I stated at the beginning of this program, I want to talk about Obama 2.0 and what the coming 4 years is going to mean for us as Christians, for you. How is it going to affect your life? And for those of you that were watching a few days ago, the inauguration took place Sunday, January the 20th, and then on the 21st. I myself did not watch it, but I did read about it in the aftermath. I read about some of the talking points that were visited by Obama during his inauguration speech. And if you have been following this ministry's focus over the last few weeks, I'm sure that you are well aware that I have been proposing that a very profound spiritual event was going to take place on Inauguration Day in the spiritual realm. And folks, I still maintain that. I believe that something did occur. I believe that something has begun. I believe that portals, spiritual gateways, and doorways to the netherworld, to the spiritual world, and the underworld have been allowed to be opened and to leak spiritual entities into the United States of America and into the world And these spiritual entities are going to affect world events in our future and in your future. So for those of you that have been watching, for those of you that have been wondering, and for those of you that have possibly been scratching your head wondering if Nathan is crazy because he said these things, many of you might be asking right now, Nathan, do you think the spirits came in? Answer, yes, I do. I believe that the beginning of spiritual Babylon has commenced. And while some people can be wondering and asking the question, Nathan, how do you know this happened? Can you prove it? Well, here's the answer, folks. The proof is going to be revealed in the coming future. The proof will be revealed in the headlines that all of us are going to be reading about. The proof is going to be revealed in the changes that are going to be coming to the United States of America. The proof is going to be revealed in new laws and in new legislation that is going to tie a noose around our freedoms and around our culture. When Obama gave his inauguration speech, he revealed that between the lines, he plans to do some things. He brought up some terminologies and ideologies in vague manner that reveals what he's all about, what he plans to do. And in my 40 plus years of observation, I don't think that I have observed a U.S. president use the same types of ideological phrases like Obama did on Inauguration Day. Obama spoke about gay rights being one of the goals in his administration. He spoke about collectivism. He spoke about sharing the wealth. He used terminologies that were very socialistic. The inauguration speech was a testament that the United States of America is no longer the same country, the same people. The inauguration ceremony revealed that for many of the people who watched and have hope that things are going to get back to normal, the inauguration ceremony revealed that normal is a thing of the past. In fact, the national anthem itself was a recording that was made in the past. It was a lip-synced recording. It wasn't done live. It was done in the past, which tells me that today's America is all theater, that today's politicians are all theater, that today's media exposés are all theater and propaganda. Now, for those that might have been expecting Obama to grow horns on live TV on Inauguration Day, that did not happen. But folks, did you really expect it to happen? Because to the student of history that has observed the mode of operation for a dictator, the fangs do not visibly appear on day one. Usually, fangs are cloaked and hidden. And taking over a nation for a dictator takes patience. It takes deception. But eventually, with enough deception, momentum is gathered. And then the power-hungry dictator is able to take advantage of the momentum. And on Inauguration Day, the momentum continued. And I say continued because Obama's already been at the helm for 4 years. The spirits have begun to arrive. And in previous programs, I have spoken about how the future demise of America is going to rhyme and mimic and be related to the same demise that we can observe in Old Testament Jerusalem when Babylon invaded the people of Judah, God's people. And if you've been reading my articles and listening to my recent programs, I have shared how in the book of Jeremiah, we can find parallels to America's demise. And one of the most notable parallels can be found in Jeremiah chapter 39, verses 1 through 3, where it talks about the timeline of Judah's destruction and invasion and siege and fall. And when we look at that timeline and compare it to America, we can also see a similar thing. I have shared about the very mysterious enigma key that is found in Jeremiah 39:2, which reveals an interesting date that when applied to America seems to fit the dates of September 11th and then moving forward seems to arrive at the date of January 20th, 2013, which was the recent Obama inauguration day. And I have shared that in Jeremiah chapter 39, when that day happened, Babylon invaded Jerusalem. And in a similar way, on January the 20th, spiritual Babylon invaded America. And when that happened, verse 3 speaks about some of the princes of Babylon who come into the city. In like manner, we have also discussed that these princes happen to be demonic entities who exist right now. And thus, these spiritual entities have also invaded the spiritual realm of America. In the last program, we looked into the resume and the attributes of these spiritual entities. We dissected them, and according to their resume and their skill set, we can also see how these demonic entities could influence a political leader. And one of the most notable entities that is listed in Jeremiah 39, chapter 3, his name is Nergal Sharezer, which means Prince of Fire, and he's also a Babylonian and Assyrian god, Nergal. We also saw another entity named Samgar Nebo, which means the Sword of Nebo. Now, while I do not have the time to re-summarize and talk about everything that these individuals are going to do, if you want more details about it, you can go to my website at watchmanscry.com. I have articles that go into very great detail about these spiritual entities. I also did a previous program, News from the Wall, number 11, part B, which went into detail about this as well. So now that we are on the other side of January the 20th, I want to talk about these spiritual entities, and I want to talk about the timeline that I expect to start occurring here in America. Now, when we observe the resume of Nergal, the first demonic entity that was mentioned, we can find that in Jeremiah chapter 39, 3, it mentions Nergal twice. And I was wondering about why his name was mentioned twice. And when we look at Jeremiah 39, 3, we can read that Nergal Sharezer is mentioned twice. When we examine this verse in the original Hebrew, the name Nergal Sharezer is written exactly the same. Now, a few days ago, I released another article that asked this question, why is Nergal mentioned twice? And I proposed one of my thoughts about it, and that was this. Nergal Sharezer, one of his attributes is that he is the god of the sun, but in particular, the god of noonday. So I shared my thoughts that Nergal Sharezer is the god of noonday, and he's mentioned two times in verse 3. So I propose that Nergal Sharezer actually, and if I may use layman's terms, Nergal Sharezer is the god of noonday. He shows up on Inauguration Day at noon when the inauguration took place on Sunday, January the 20th. And then he also showed up the next day on Monday when Obama took a second oath of office. So I propose that Nergal's mentioned twice because Obama had two inaugurations. And then I got a few emails from some other individuals that said, well, Nathan, is it possible that Nergal is mentioned twice so that he can slime Obama and then he can also slime Joe Biden, vice president? And you know, folks, I guess that's possible. Maybe so. And if that is the case, what that tells us is that there's plenty of residue to go around, because in Jeremiah 39:3, it actually says that. It says the princes came in with all the residue of the princes of the king of Babylon. So what does residue mean? It's the leftovers, leftover contamination, so to speak. So in regards to the inauguration ceremony, the arrival of Babylon and the destruction of the walls and the city, it has begun. The spiritual residue and sludge has arrived in America, and it is going to start churning and doing its work. Those individuals who arrived are doing their thing behind the scenes. They're having their high council meetings of darkness. They're formulating their plans. Also in the administrative offices of America, of the White House, of the Oval Office, they are also having their meetings. And we're going to be seeing the result of their meetings and their schemes in the days ahead. Now, one thing that I wanted to touch as a side note, this is an interesting thing that has been getting some attention in the last few days, and it has to do with our beloved president, Mr. Obama. Now, as I have been talking about the spiritual entity Nergal, it appears that Nergal is a very, very high-ranking principality in the spiritual realm. And Nergal is in the service to Beelzebub. Now, Beelzebub is one of the very, very top demonic entities for Satan. He's right under Satan. In fact, some people would even say that Satan and Beelzebub are the same individual. So, Nergal is in service to Beelzebub. Now, Beelzebub, when you break his name down, means Beel or Baal, meaning Lord, and Zebub means the fly. The reference for Beelzebub can be found in Matthew 12:27. So Lord of the Fly is what Beelzebub actually means when you break the word down. Now, I find it interesting that flies are associated with a satanic principality. Why is that? Well, it's because flies represent several things. And if we were to start researching ancient archaeology and some of the occultic practices and beliefs, going back to the Babylonians or the Egyptian cultures or the Assyrians or the Mesopotamians, we would find over and over that flies were held in high esteem because flies represented death. Because after all, flies know when something has died. They know when something is rotting and they're attracted to the death. They're attracted to the disgusting filth, to the rotting of flesh. So in these cultures that I just mentioned, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, Assyrians, Mesopotamians, and others, they actually would make jewelry that had flies on them, and they would bury some of their kings and queens with this jewelry with golden flies. Now, why am I bringing this up? Here's why, folks, and if you've been following recent news, you probably know where I'm going with this, but it appears that our beloved president, Mr. Obama, seems to have a fly problem. And for those of you that saw the recent news stories, over the last 4 years when Obama has been doing his speeches or interviews or when he's talking to a reporter, he seems to have a chronic challenge with flies appearing and wanting to land on his face when he's talking. Now, why is this? And to those that may be doubting and to those who are the skeptic and who might be saying, well, Nathan, come on. He went into a fly-filled room. There were a lot of flies. Well, possibly that's true, but I've watched several interviews where a reporter was holding a microphone to him or where a reporter was interviewing him and sitting across from him, and the reporter did not seem to have a fly problem. The reporter did not have flies landing on him or her, but Obama did. And a few days ago, some pictures were snapped of a fly that landed right in the middle of Obama's forehead when he was giving a speech. Right on his forehead. This is a few days ago. And to those who are in the New Age, they would say that the fly landed dead center on his forehead, which is the third eye, his spirit eye, his spirit New Age eye. And I saw another clip where the fly would not stop bothering him, and in one of them, he actually was able to kill it with his bare hands. I saw another image where the fly lands on his cheek, and then there was another one where it crawls on his face and doesn't seem to bother him when he's talking. So folks, I find myself wondering, is this just something odd that has a simple explanation? It was the time of the year where there's a lot of flies. Well, a few days ago was in January. Are there flies in January, folks, in the middle of winter? Why does Obama have flies attracted to him? Now, in my little finite brain, I can only arrive at several reasons. Number one, perhaps Obama has some kind of odor that attracts flies. And based on my knowledge, most of the times flies are not attracted to fresh scents. Flies are attracted to bad odor, to body odor. So number one, does Obama have a body odor problem? And that's why they're attracted to him? And if that's the truth, folks, do you really believe that? Do you believe that the leader of the free world has no time to bathe? Or, God forbid, poor guy, he has a gland problem? So he emits some kind of strange, captivating chemical scent that attracts these flies? Now, folks, I can't believe I'm even saying this, but we're talking flies are being attracted to our president. Flies, folks. Now, think about it. Flies are attracted to dead things. They're attracted to rotten things. They're attracted to stinky things, unhealthy things. They're attracted to bacteria. Or perhaps they're attracted to spiritual things, things of dark magic. Is that possible? Well, getting back to what I mentioned a moment ago, I researched and started to dig. When I saw this phenomenon happen to the president, I started to research and dig. Because I asked myself, okay, I have proposed on my programs that Nurgle, the demonic creature, has entered the White House on Inauguration Day. And this creature is now present in the vicinity of Obama. And I believe that this entity has manifested itself and invoked some of his abilities on Obama. As I continued my research, Lo and behold, folks, now get this. It turns out that when archaeologists have been digging up artifacts from Babylon or Egypt or Assyria or Mesopotamia, archaeologists have uncovered what is called an interesting little tool that spans all of these cultures, and it's called a cylinder seal. Now, a cylinder seal is a little round cylinder type tube that's like a rolling pin, if you will, a very short rolling pin. And what they used to do back then is they would take rock and make it into the shape of a cylinder so that it could be rolled. And they would carve a little story into the cylinders. They would carve their deities, their gods. They would carve the stories of their history. And there have been cylinder seals that have been uncovered that have Nurgle carved into them. And these cylinder seals have been found in the culture of Babylon, Egypt, Assyria. And these things exist in museums, and they're also in private collections. And Nurgle, when he has been carved into these cylinder seals, has several times been included in a pictorial where he's surrounded by flies. In fact, in one of the cylinder seals, Nurgle was carved as a fly. In several of them, he is associated with flies. Nurgle is associated with flies. Now, folks, please hear what I'm saying right here. Archaeological artifacts have uncovered this demon creature Nurgle, and he has flies on him. I, Nathan Liao of Watchman's Cry, have proposed to the world that Nurgle, this demonic creature, has infected the White House of the United States of America. And Nurgle is associated with flies, and in Nurgle's biography, he is also one of Beelzebub, who is Lord of the Flies. He's one of his servants. He is the officer of Beelzebub's secret police. So when we start looking at these characters, behind the scenes, we have Nurgle, this creepy creature who has a very long resume, who works for Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. He has been viewed as the god of plague and death. So to the ancients, they believe that Nurgle had this power over death. He was the god of the netherworld, of the underworld. So they represented him with flies. And now, how creepy is what I'm saying right here? I know it is. This sounds bizarre, but folks, our president seems to attract flies. That's a side note, but as I saw this report about Obama and his issue with flies, I'm just wondering, folks, I'm asking the question out loud. Is it possible that this is actually telling us a little clue? Is this possibly a hint for those who have the eyes to see? Folks, I'm throwing it out. I know what I'm proposing here is bizarre, but nevertheless, we are not limited to the physical world. We live in a world that includes a spiritual realm. And in that spiritual realm, we have spiritual entities that have lived longer than we have for thousands of years. There are entities that God is allowing to lurk to and fro on this planet of Earth, and to be the thorns on the sides of humans so that we can learn spiritual battle and warfare. God allows them to coexist with us, not in peace and not in harmony, but so that we can find out where our faith lies. Now, folks, please hear me. Nurgle's resume is going to pound away at America until the plans are accomplished. And it's going to happen in several ways. One of the things that I'm realizing, as I stated a moment ago, it appears that the manner of Babylon's invasion over America is going to happen in waves. Waves like the beach on the ocean. It's going to happen in continual waves, one after the other, in slow movement, as well as quick movement. It's going to happen in waves that come in large and strike hard, as well as waves that come in softly. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the reason that it's going to occur this way has several motivations behind it. One of them is when the enemy, Satan, takes over a land, and when he deceives the people with his schemes of tyranny, he doesn't do it quickly. He does it slow. He builds the infrastructure behind the scenes. He recruits the human individuals, the players, the vassals, the puppets, the minions who have sold their soul to Satan in hopes of getting some kind of reward from him. So Satan recruits the dark ones, who are deceived and want to play a part in the grand scheme. And then he builds the infrastructure. And then he begins dismantling the nation and doing the changes. Now, what I'm saying right here has been observed over and over in previous regimes. And later on in this program, I'm going to talk about it. But one of the key things that we cannot forget is that as these waves of evil influence are morphing America into a new creature, eventually the infrastructure will tilt to the point where it will collapse. And then the chaos begins, which is the next pivotal chapter of the plan. And in America's future, I see that eventually America is going to face a civil war. It's going to face civil unrest, social unrest. We're going to see those things happen, folks. It's going to be unfortunate. It's going to be very painful to watch. There will be a lot of individuals who will be succumbed by it. There will be individuals who will not be able to see it clearly for what it really is. A lot of people are going to fall, including people who have faith in God. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 19, verse 1, it says, "The burden against Egypt, behold, the Lord rides on a swift cloud and will come into Egypt. The idols of Egypt will totter at his presence, and the heart of Egypt will melt in its midst." Verse 2, "And I will set Egyptians against Egyptians. Everyone will fight against his brother, and everyone against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom." Verse 3, "The spirit of Egypt will fail in its midst. I will destroy their counsel, and they will consult the idols and the charmers, the mediums and the sorcerers." Verse 4, "And the Egyptians I will give into the hand of a cruel master, and a fierce king will rule over them, says the Lord of hosts." And while some may say that this is a prophecy about Egypt and limited to Egypt, prophecy also has dual meanings, dual layers, and applications to others. For those of you that are versed in the scriptures, you're aware that the Bible uses the term Egypt as an example to reference the idolatry of the entire world. And the Bible uses the symbology of returning to Egypt in the same way as it relates to a Christian who had faith in God and then went back into the world, or in other words, went back to Egypt and backslid and fell away from God. Well, in this prophecy about Egypt, it talks about brother against brother, kingdom against kingdom, city against city in a battle in the end. And this prophecy is actually a cross-reference to what we can read in Matthew 24, where Jesus talks about the beginnings of sorrows in Matthew 24, verse 7. "For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famine, earthquakes." So when we look at the words of prophecy in the end times, there will be a season where we will see clashes which were once thought impossible, unthinkable, or undesirable, where brother fights brother, or in other words, where there is civil war, where there is uprising, where there is social unrest. So regarding the Super Bowl, folks, is it possible that it is a prophetic object lesson that is playing out before our very eyes? The two head coaches who represent the final teams from the Super Bowl are actually brothers, the Harbaugh brothers. Brother against brother. Now, while that might seem like a little bit of trivia to the unsuspecting person, I was wondering if it is possible that there could be a prophetic message. Since we are talking about football, I would like to share a dream that I had about 2 months ago. At the end of 2012, it was probably around November. And in this dream, I've been trying to find the understanding of all the meanings of it. And I've been asking God about it. And for the most part, the dream speaks for itself. But there are some parts of it that are a little bit puzzling and mysterious. So I want to share it right now. And perhaps if it strikes illumination in one of you, please email me and tell me what you think. But in this dream, I was watching a TV screen. At first, I couldn't see anything on the picture. I just heard the announcer announcing the players that were going to be participating in a football game. But I couldn't see anybody. And then the announcer said, "And playing quarterback at number 39. And when he said number 39, the TV screen was filled with a football player whose back was to me. And from the waist up, I could see his back. His jersey was red, white, and blue. I know that the New England Patriots have a red, white, and blue jersey, but this one did not look like the New England Patriots. It was red, white, and blue, kind of like the American flag. So When I saw the back of his jersey, the announcer said, in plain quarterback. And when he said quarterback, the person who I was looking at, the athlete, whose back was to me, lifted his right hand, and in his right hand was a football, and he went into the quarterback pose. You know how a quarterback will stand to hold a football? And well, he was holding the football, his back was to me, and here was the odd part. The announcer said, playing quarterback at number 39 is Lucifer. When he said that, I read Lucifer on the back of his jersey. So on top of the number 39, it was white letters, Lucifer. And then the dream was over. And for the last 2 months, I have been wondering, and I've asked God, what does 39 mean? Now, the red, white, and blue is pretty obvious. Lucifer is the quarterback of America's team. Or in other words, he's the quarterback of America. So that's what that part meant. In the dream, the announcement was made. He had the football. He's the one that was going to be throwing the ball, running the ball, calling the shots. He was in control. He was the general of Team America. Now, that part I understood, but the part I did not understand is, what does 39 mean? And over the last few weeks, I have been researching, I have looked and tried to find out what significance 39 has. And some of the things that I've been able to uncover are that the Bilderbergs have 39 chief members in three groups of 13. 39 seems to be a very significant number to the Satanists because it's 13 times 3. And then another one is that the United Nations has 39 floors in their building, but Lucifer had a red, white, and blue outfit. So what did that mean? In light of the recent announcement and studies that I have been sharing regarding Jeremiah 39, is it possible that because Babylon has now come into America on Inauguration Day, does this mean that the control of America is being transferred to Lucifer? And from the very pivotal date of January 20th and 21st, Lucifer / Satan took over as the quarterback of America? Now, folks, this could well indeed be what this means. So how's it going to play out? Nergal and Shamgar Nebo and these other entities and principalities who have now come into the White House are part of the cabinet of Satan and of Lucifer, but Lucifer's the real quarterback over America. Is this what this means? Now, when we look at how a quarterback plays a game, a quarterback at times will throw the ball for short yardage gains, and then other times he'll throw the ball far for a long gain of yardage. Sometimes the quarterback will hand off the ball to another player who will run the ball for short gains. And then sometimes the running back will make large gains on the ground. So based on this prophetic dream that I had about Lucifer being the quarterback of America, I believe what it reveals is that Satan is going to be moving his plan and his schemes in Obama 2.0. It's going to take place with short gains as well as long gains. Or in other words, it's going to happen methodical. It's going to happen in steps, in phases. So behind the scenes, when we observe Obama's actions, Lucifer's playing quarterback, and through Obama, he is going to be chipping away at the infrastructure of America, and he's going to also be making progress with the new laws that are going to be coming in. Now, in February, I believe that another wave, another phase is going to enter America. We are not finished with the entities that are going to come in and the events that are going to play a role in America regarding the invisible principalities. And there's another event that is going to be taking place in a few weeks from now. And based on the research that I have been continuing to uncover, wave after wave is going to continue to come in. One's going to come in February, and then one after the other, month after month, we're going to continue to observe the deterioration of the Constitution and Freedoms of America. We are going to continually observe draconian laws thrown upon America in Obama 2.0. Now, the reason that I'm saying this, folks, is because over the past few years, there have been many prophetic dreams that I have not published. Sometimes I just keep it to myself. I have had 5 tsunami dreams where I've seen the water come in, and it comes in waves. I had one dream where the tsunami waves came in and they were about 30 minutes apart. And by the 5th or 6th wave, it was about 10 or 15 feet deep. And these dreams that I have been having have several meanings. that the events coming upon America are going to happen in waves. And if we were to actually stop and take a look at the past 4 years, and if we looked backwards in time, we have seen the demise of America has been happening in waves. The legislation has been occurring systematically. It's not all occurring at once. It's happening slowly. And the reason that that's happening is because it's difficult for most people to observe and to become alarmed when the waves are not that pronounced. So, folks, what does this mean? If the waves are going to continue coming in every few weeks or every month or every few months, that means that every month we travel in the timeline of our lives here in America, that is one less month that we have to prepare. And that is another month where another phase has possibly entered America, which may have included new draconian laws. So please do not wait in your preparation, because every week and month that you delay, the water is going to get deeper and more difficult to maneuver and to deal with and to travel through. Your plan of escape, survival, endurance is going to be harder to accomplish. So my friends, please do not delay. Your supplies could get more expensive in the coming months than they are right now. The price of your supplies that you plan to get in several months versus now could be prohibitive, harder to find, or harder to afford. Now, folks, I want to explain what I mean by these waves, by the waves of progressive demise. As we continue to observe Obama 2.0, there are going to be many individuals who wonder, who is he? Who is Obama? Is America going to be witnessing the rise of the Fourth Reich? And then there will be some that will speculate and wonder about that very hard question that perhaps many do not want to visit, or some people have a problem entertaining. Can Mr. Obama be the villain that we read about in the book of Revelation? And perhaps on the surface there may be some who will say, Nathan, no, that's not possible, because according to my end time view, it doesn't fit what I have already studied. I know that there have been many books written that say that the end time villain has to come from a region that is not America. He has to come from the revived Roman Empire. He has to come from Europe. He has to come from the royalty of the blue blood that we find in the United Kingdom. He has to be related to Prince Charles or one of his descendants. He has to come from the Middle East. He has to be an Assyrian. And I am planning to talk about this topic in a future program, but I'm throwing that out there because I have a feeling, ladies and gentlemen, that as time progresses, many individuals are going to start asking that question. Is it possible that when Jesus returns, will there be Bible scholars at that moment in time who will scratch their head and say, wow, I did not see that coming. I didn't think it was going to happen the way it did happen. Wow, silly me. And ladies and gentlemen, I do believe that these things are going to play out as I am describing right now. So getting back to the question of our dear president, Mr. Obama, will individuals wonder, is this the guy? And while I am not at this moment saying that he is, I want to say this, folks, I'm also not saying that he is not. Because at this point in time, I don't know. And since I do not know, I want to stay vigilant. I want to leave that question on the table. And while we are not addressing the answer to that question, in simplicity, I know that I can say this. Based on what we are observing in the present trend of America and in the present leadership of America, it is possible to speculate on some things. And as I have been dissecting this whole matter, based on what I am observing, there are several possibilities that we can conclude. Number one, Obama is going to come and go. He's going to be the president for another 4 years, and then he's going to be finished, and someone's going to take his place. Another possibility is that Obama is being used to destroy America and to take America into a new political direction. At this point, that political direction seems to be socialism and communism with a seasoning of fascism. And for those that would say, Nathan, don't talk about my president that way. How dare you? He's an American. He only wants to do what's best for this nation. Well, if that is true, my friend, I have to ask, then why have we been watching and observing a trend that seems to be going against what's healthy for America? We are observing a trend that is destroying America. We are observing a trend that has butchered the business of America. We are seeing American corporations export their factories from America. The jobs are being destroyed. And the federal government is actually taking over many of the corporations that were once independent. We are seeing this in the automobile industry, the insurance industry, the mortgage industry, the banking industry, the health industry. These are the most powerful industries in America, and they are all being nationalized right now. And when we compare that trend to what we've observed in the past, there are other regimes in the world that have gone down this same path. And one of the most notable ones happens to be the Third Reich of Hitler's Germany. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is not possible to observe America's present trend and say that it's business as usual, because it is not. So, as I was stating earlier, who is Obama and what are his motives? Is he a president that's going to come and go and then someone will take his place? Or is he an individual that desires to be, and if I may use the word, dictator, tyrant? Does Obama want to follow in the steps of Hitler and be a dictator? Does he, folks? And I wonder if someone who supported Obama was willing to openly visit the opening of the books and compare side by side the trends of Obama versus the trends of Hitler. Now, we're going to talk about that in a moment, but as I said, Obama is one of several characters and has one of several motives. He's a regular president and he's just very idealistic. He's going to try to bring these changes to America and then he's going to leave willingly in 2016. Or is he a person that wants to mimic Hitler? Now, if he does want to mimic Hitler and bring fascism and communism and socialism to America, is he going to willingly leave in 2016? That's another question. How about the third possibility, folks? What if Obama is the villain that we read about in the end times? What if he's the little horn that we read about in the book of Daniel, who's going to take the world into the end time New World Order beast? Is that possible? Or how about this? What if he's the forerunner for the little horn that's coming after him? Is that possible? I know that the Muslims are waiting for their Mahdi, and the New Agers are waiting for their Maitreya. And those who are part of the occult, the pagan religions of the world, they're waiting for their Messiah as well. I'm asking a lot of questions, folks, because that's what this program's about, to visit these things. And while answering all of these questions is beyond the scope of one program, today I want to talk about one of the possibilities of the present Obama administration following what we read about in history with the Third Reich. Now, I want to qualify what I'm about to share as Nathan Liao asking healthy questions. Who is Barack Hussein Obama? When we consider where we are in the timeline of Bible prophecy, the conclusion seems to point to the summary that we are in the end times. Not just the end times, but we are very far along in the end times. And if that is the case, then we can also conclude that in the season of the end times, there's going to be a lot of rearranging occur on the grand chessboard of the earth. But one of the events that's going to take place is going to be that the political atmosphere is going to have a vacuum where a leader is going to rise up and influence the direction of the world. And then I have to ask the question, could it be Obama? And if it is Obama, then biblical rationale would tell us that we are going to start seeing Obama do things in his administration that is going to take the world into the direction where he is in charge of most of the world, or a large pocket of the world, where it's going to be him. If Obama's the guy, I expect to see him formulate decrees and legislation and laws and treaties that are going to affect not only the United States of America, but the whole world. And folks, I see that happening right now. There are some wheels that are turning behind the scenes, and I'm going to be speaking about them in some upcoming programs, but these wheels have to do with America placing her cloak around the entire world and commanding many areas of the world to obey what America says. Who is Barack Hussein Obama? Which hat is he going to wear in these end times? Who is he? He's the man of mystery, folks. And in my opinion, it would be very acceptable if Barack Hussein Obama came and served his second term, and then if he left. It would be acceptable to me if he did that. I'll take it. And perhaps between now and then, if somehow God decided to tarry And if God decided to slow down the end time bullet train, if God decided to slow it down, folks, and push it back, I'll take it. And is it possible that could happen? Well, if enough people got together in the next 4 years and started praying and seeking God, and if enough people came back to Him, and if enough people returned from their backslidden state, if righteousness was starting to experience a rebirth and a renewal in America, could God stay the judgment and the final end time effort? Of course He could, folks. I'll take that one. And because I'll take that one needs to be left on the table. But thus far, based on the trend that I'm observing in America, I do not see that happening. And while it can change toward that direction, at the moment, I do not see that happening. Therefore, I am maintaining my warning that we need to prepare for a worst case scenario, which is that Obama is going to go down the road of a dictatorship or of tyranny, or his road and his instructions are to destroy America and then leave and hand off the baton to someone else that will be even worse than him. And while that's possible, that still falls under the category of America is no longer the same and becomes a tyrant. So how is this going to take place? And while I do not have the exact details of every step that we're going to experience over the next 4 years, there are some things that I want to share that have to do with the parallels that we can observe when we look at a nation that experiences their downfall. Because we do have the notes of previous regimes. We do have the references to the manifestos and the literature and the propaganda of past history. We have the Communist Manifesto that has existed for decades that speaks about how to destroy a country. We can look at the words of Mein Kampf, Hitler's Book of Secrets and Lies. And we also have the decrees and the mandates that Hitler passed when he was in power. So folks, if we examine the past, then we are able to have something to compare to. Based on what we can see right now, it appears that the net is spreading across America that's going to vex and oppress the people. It appears that the chains of bondage are being forged right now. It appears that crazy regulations are being written right now. And based on all of these things, I have to warn that at the moment, I can see nightmarish scenarios approaching us where the innocent people of America are going to become the fodder to warm the fires of cackling evil plans and evil spirits. Based on the present trends that we are observing in the White House, I see that there's going to be an increase in false arrests, false accusations, and the Constitution is going to become the paper that Obama rolls his communistic cigars with. Already, I'm hearing reports that because the state of New York enacted unconstitutional laws restricting assault weapons, I read a story just yesterday of an individual who was arrested because he had AR-15 magazines that held more than 10 rounds of ammunition. And because the state of New York outlawed them, he faces 5 felony counts just for having magazines. Folks, these are the kind of things I'm talking about. Now, over the last few weeks, I have been studying and reading about the rise of the Third Reich and the things that Hitler did when he took over Germany. And by the way, if you have the opportunity to read this book, it's a very, very thick book. It's called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. If you go down to your local library, perhaps you can get it or even purchase it on Amazon.com. But it goes into great detail on how Hitler took over Germany. And as I have been reading this and studying and comparing to what's happening in America, I am observing that Hitler was under the spell and control and possession of evil spirits. And these evil spirits that were controlling Hitler, they were very crafty, they were very smart, and they used Hitler in a way that defies. Even now, folks, when I think about it, it's amazing how blatantly deceptive Hitler was. And it's even more amazing that the people fell for it, that they believed him. And there are 2 events that happened in the takeover of Germany involving Hitler that were very pivotal and foundational to his success as being a dictator. And in January the 30th of 1933, Hitler became the official chancellor of Germany. At that time, Germany had checks and balances. Germany had a president, and they also had a chancellor. They had several political parties. They had a parliament that voted on laws, on legislation, and their parliament was like our Congress. They had a constitution. They had articles that listed one by one the different freedoms for German citizens. And when Hitler took power on January the 30th, 1933, which here we are, folks, 80 years, a little less than 80 years now. When he took power in the first month of his office on February the 27th, just a few weeks after he came into power, the parliament building of Germany, which is called the Reichstag, which if we were to compare it to the United States, would be the Capitol building where Congress meets. And on February the 27th, late at night, the parliament building was burnt down. Gasoline was spread throughout, and arsonists burned it down. And within minutes of the fire, Hitler and members of the Nazi party started to announce to the entire country of Germany that the communists set the building on fire. They blamed it on the communists. They told the people that it had been determined that the building was on fire because the communists were starting a revolution throughout Germany, and that the communists were going to be conducting acts of terrorism against all German people. And the terrorism was going to attack prominent individuals of Germany, private property. It was going to attack the lives and the safety of the peaceful population of Germany. And the communists intended for the result of their revolution to cause a civil war, which was going to be unleashed throughout Germany. So by the next day, on February the 28th, now at this time in the government of Germany, Germany had the position of the chancellor and the position of the president. Its purpose was to have checks and balances. Well, at that time, Hitler was the chancellor, and the president of Germany at that time was Paul von Hindenburg. And Hindenburg was very old at this time in his life. So Hitler convinced Hindenburg to sign a decree which placed Germany in a state of emergency and in martial law. So when Hitler convinced Hindenburg to sign this new mandate, President Hindenburg used the area of their constitution called Article 48, which allowed him to take appropriate measures to remedy the emergency. And he was able to do this. It was a loophole where he was able to make a mandate without the approval of their parliament, the Reichstag. So he did that by himself. It was like an executive order. So this decree that Hindenburg wrote was called the Reichstag Fire Decree. It consisted of 6 articles. Now, folks, listen to this. 27 days after Hitler's in power, he convinced the president of the country to issue a decree. And here's what it said. The first article indefinitely suspended most of the civil liberties set forth in their constitution. No more civil liberty. And I have it right here. Let me just read what it says. The constitution of the German Reich are suspended until further notice. It is therefore permissible to, number one, restrict the rights of personal freedom, which is habeas corpus. Number two, restrict the freedom of expression and opinion, including freedom of the press. Number three, restrict the freedom to organize and assemble. Restrict the privacy of the post office, telegraphic communications, and telephone communications. So in other words, they could read the mail of German citizens and listen to phone calls. It also said that warrants for house searches will no longer be necessary, and orders to confiscate private property would then be permissible beyond the previous legal limits of their constitution. So in conclusion, within a little over 4 weeks of Hitler being in power, he suspended their constitution. And from that point on, they started rounding up anyone accused of going against the government, going against Hitler's leadership. Anyone that was accused of being a communist was rounded up and thrown into the camps. Many of them were shot. Many of them were hung. Many of them were mistreated. And when we look at how Hitler could have done this so quickly, it's because they had an act of terrorism. And history now tells us that it appears that Hitler's Nazi party were the very ones that burnt down the Reichstag building. And then he blamed it on the communists. And he used the term terrorism to scare all the people into submission. So February the 28th, folks, within 1 month, the Reichstag fire decree. It remained in force for the duration of the Nazi era, but it didn't stop there, because less than 1 month later, on March the 23rd, the Enabling Act was then written. And the Enabling Act was a law that made Hitler the effective dictator of Nazi Germany. Again, President Hindenburg signed it, and here's the part that's amazing. The majority of the members of the parliament also signed it into law. It declared and decreed that the parliament would no longer be necessary. Amazing, folks. Now, to the one wondering and asking, how in the world did Hitler convince the parliament to sign this thing? Well, here's how. Because Hitler's secret police, his Stasi, threatened them or their family. So there was a lot of fear at this time. Now, as I am sharing these things, try to compare some of the wording that I'm revealing. Because I've noticed that the same type of words are being used even right now in legislation in America. The Homeland Security Act, the Patriot Act, Parts 1 and 2, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, and on and on and on. We have in America all of these draconian laws that are doing similar things. And the foundation of all of these laws have to do with keeping the people safe from the quote-unquote terrorists. So this law had four articles. It was very short, but I have it right here. Article 1, the laws of the Reich may be enacted by the government of the Reich. In other words, Hitler's Reich. Whatever Hitler said will become the governing authority of Germany, of the Reich. Number 2, laws that are enacted by the government of the Reich, or in other words, Hitler's government, any law that Hitler comes up with may deviate from the Constitution. Interesting, huh, folks? Number 3, laws enacted by the Reich government shall be issued by the Chancellor. Oh, wow, how convenient. Hitler was the Chancellor. So the laws that are announced by the Reich government will be announced by Hitler. And they will also be published and printed in the Reich Gazette. So it will be placed in the state paper of propaganda so that everyone can read and know noose-tightening laws for the citizens of Germany. How convenient. And then Article 4 said that any treaties that the Reich did with foreign states shall be valid without the consent of the Reichstag, the parliament. In other words, any treaty that Hitler did would become the law, meaning that he had the power to make secret treaties with other nations. For example, a treaty with Russia to invade Poland and divide Poland between Germany and Russia. Or in other words, to give away resources of other countries as they invaded other countries. So under this act, the Enabling Act, the Hitler regime acquired the authority to pass any law they wanted without parliamentary consent or oversight, and it allowed him to deviate from the Constitution. Here's the part that's amazing, folks. The Enabling Act also removed presidential oversight from Germany. So President Hindenburg signed away his office. Now, how amazing is that? From that point on, Hitler became the Führer. He became the dictator. And within 3 months after this act, all opposing parties were banned from Germany. The Labor Party, the other Socialist Party, and then there was the Central Party, which consisted of Catholics. They were all banned and done away with because Hitler was now the guy. When we observe these events in history, it's interesting, folks, that Hitler used legal channels to invoke the power that he had. He did it through legislation and decrees. So in his eyes, he believed that he went through the correct routes. When we look back in history and we scratch our head and say, how in the world did he do this? Well, as I have stated, he had the help of demonic entities. And then it seemed that there was a spell that had been settled over the politicians of his time that went along with him. It was a very, very dark time in world history. And the accomplishments that Hitler made during that era were not only done because of intellect. And when we look at these insane laws that Germany passed, if somehow we could go to a common German citizen in 1931 or 1932 and ask them, hey, do you think that in a year or two, your country is going to be controlled by a dictator who's going to kill, maim, and murder and arrest many of your citizens? Do you think that's possible? How many German citizens would say no way? And when you ask them, why do you say that? They would say, because we have a constitution. We have checks and balances. Our government wouldn't do that. There are too many people that would rise up and resist. No, it couldn't happen. But nevertheless, folks, we know otherwise now. So if it could happen in Hitler's time, and if it did happen then, How can it not happen again? And then when we look at what the Bible says, there's going to be a dictator over the whole planet, a one world government, a table of 10 kings with the influence of a very charismatic and convincing villain is going to rule the world. And Satan is going to give them their authority and power. Now, folks, if Satan gives the New World Order its authority in Revelation chapter 13, then between now and then, what's going to happen in America? If we are that close to the end times, when is this transfer taking place? I have submitted and proposed that that transition is happening right now. And it began with these spiritual entities that entered the White House on Inauguration Day. Now, as I shared earlier, the MO of the New World Order is to do it in waves, in segments. We can observe that over and over. And when we look at what Hitler did, he did it in waves. Now, his waves happened very quickly. The Parliament building caught on fire within 1 month, and then they passed the fire decree. And then another month later, the Enabling Act passed. But from 1933, when the Enabling Act was passed, it took Hitler approximately 5 to 6 years before he started invading his neighbors. But in that 5 to 6 years, he also did something else. He started brainwashing the people, rewriting the books in their schools, in their colleges. They started burning books that did not serve their interests. They brought in the sword of fear upon all the people. And part of the strategy between 1933 till 1938 and 39, when he started invading his neighbors, Hitler was conducting his propaganda campaign to brainwash German citizens. And according to Hitler, the greatest resource that Nazi Germany had were the youth. When a person who opposed his tactics said, "I will never come over to your side," Hitler said in a speech in 1933, "That's okay. If you don't want to come over to my side, it doesn't matter because your child belongs to us already. Besides, what are you? You're going to die. You're going to pass on. And your descendants, whoever they are going to then stand in a new camp." Hitler also said that the youth of Germany belonged to no one but the Third Reich. And he said that he was going to take them and give them his own education, and he was going to influence their upbringing. Folks, that's exactly what he did, because he mandated over the next few years that all youth needed to participate in his youth program. A program where in their high school years, they indoctrinated them with the Nazi ways, Aryan superiority, racial superiority. And here's the part that's interesting. When the Hitler Youth began their program, they had to go through a very regimented physical fitness program where he controlled their diet, where they had to live away from their parents and be indoctrinated and trained. Effectively, what he was doing was creating an army of very loyal followers. He controlled their diet. He limited their portions. He didn't give them much meat and was very controlling over the intake of their calories. And you know, folks, when you think about it, the Obama administration has come under criticism and fire because they have changed the menus of the public school system here in America. They have restricted calories. They have said and stated that the kids, they have to be controlled with the things they eat. And their motives are shrouded under the guise of, it's only for their health that we are doing this. But ladies and gentlemen, as I stated earlier, when we compare and when we look at the parallels of the Third Reich and Hitler's motivations and schemes, and when we compare them to what Obama's doing, how interesting is it that we are seeing parallels? All of the children in Germany had mandatory conscription. They had to participate in volunteer work for Germany. And when we compare that to Obama, Obama stated in his 2008 campaign that one of his goals was to have a youth corps, a youth army that was just as strong and just as well equipped as the U.S. military.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
Why did he say that? Where did he get this idea? What's his motivation? Interesting, huh, folks? The Hitler Youth Brigade or the Obama Youth Brigade. Those are some things that we need to be following. Now, for those that might be saying, "Nathan, we don't have the Enabling Act yet or the fire decree that gets rid of the checks and balances." Well, actually, folks, there have been executive orders by the hundreds that have been written over the last several years that do exactly that. There are executive orders that state, in the event of a national emergency or martial law, that all of the power of the United States will resort to the executive branch. The legislative branch and the Supreme Court will no longer be needed during the emergencies. There are other executive orders that take over the transportation of America. There are executive orders that are draconian. They are, in fact, even more tyrannical than the Enabling Act of Hitler. And the reason for all of these executive orders seems to continually be blamed on the threat of terror, the threat of enemies, the threat of acts of violence and unrest and a breakdown in society. Why are all of those executive orders already on the books? Here's why, folks. Because when the time is chosen, they will feign and claim that whatever they do from that point on is legal and that they went through the right channels. You know, folks, since we are talking about false flags, is it possible that we're going to see another false flag here in America? Is that feasible? I was listening to one of Obama's speeches during his 2008 campaign, and in his speech, the crowd was shouting over and over, "Obama, Obama." And out of curiosity, I listened to the crowd's chanting backwards. And here's what's interesting, folks. When I played it backwards, it sounded like the crowd was saying 911, 911. Now, I know that that sounds bizarre and crazy and interesting, but I want to just play this part for you right now. Listen to this, folks. I'm going to first play it forward, and then I'm going to play it backwards. So here we go.
This war in Iraq, we will bring our troops home.
Okay, now that's forward. They're chanting Obama, Obama. Now, let's listen to it backwards. Watch this. Could you hear it, folks? Sounded to me like 911. And the thing that strikes me as very interesting and anomalous is that right after the crowd was shouting Obama, Obama then started to speak. And his context was talking about 9/11 or 911. And he stated that 911 would never be used as something to cause fear, but instead it will be used to unite the people. Listen to what he says right here.
This war in Iraq, we will bring our troops home. We will finish the job. We will finish the job against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. We will care for our veterans. We will restore our moral standing in the world. And we will never use 9/11. And we will never use 9/11. And we will never use 9/11 as a way to scare up votes, because it is not a tactic to win an election. It is a challenge that should unite America. It is a challenge that should unite America. It is a challenge that should unite America.
Interesting, huh, folks? I believe that we are witnessing something very, very strange in the presidency of Obama. There are a lot of layers of weirdness to his presidency, to who he is, to his background, to his makeup. Who is he? Where did he come from? What is his purpose? If he's not a normal guy, could we find some clues and hints about him? That's why I was talking about the fly thing, the Nurgle thing. If Obama is, as I suspect, under the control of dark entities and spirits, have they from time to time thrown out hints and clues? Now, in this same speech, by the way, Obama shared some talking points that gained a lot of traction in his supporters, and that was the Yes We Can speech. He would give this speech and use this term during his first campaign. And the reason that I zeroed in on this particular speech is because I had been prompted by, and I don't remember where I heard it initially, but someone took the liberty of playing the Yes We Can speech backwards, and they found out that when you play Yes We Can backwards, now folks, the words sound like thank you, Satan. So I was listening to that, and then I found that speech, and I started listening to it backwards, and that's how I came across the 9/11 portion. Now, if I have aroused your curiosity, Let me play the yes we can portion, and then I'm going to play it backwards, and you decide for yourself. Now, when Obama would state the words yes we can, he would always preface those words with a phrase that sounded motivational or inspiring. So I'm going to play, let's listen to the whole thing forward.
We have been told we cannot do this by a chorus of cynics, and they will only grow louder and more dissonant in the weeks and months to come. We've been asked to pause for a reality check. We've been warned against offering the people of this nation false hope. But in the unlikely story that is America, there has never been anything false about hope. For when we have faced down impossible odds, when we've been told we're not ready, or that we shouldn't try, or that we can't, generations of Americans have responded with a simple creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of a nation. Yes, we can. It was whispered by slaves and abolitionists as they blazed a trail towards freedom through the darkest of nights. Yes, we can. It was sung by immigrants as they struck out from distant shores and pioneers who pushed westward against an unforgiving wilderness. Yes, we can. It was the call of workers who organized, women who reached for the ballot, a president who chose the moon as our new frontier, and a king who took us to the mountaintop and pointed the way to the promised land. Yes, we can to justice and equality. Yes, we can to opportunity and prosperity. Yes, we can heal this nation. Yes, we can repair this world. Yes, we can.
Okay, now I'm going to play the same thing, but I'm going to turn the yes, we can part backwards. So now listen to it, folks.
We have been told we cannot do this by a chorus of cynics, and they will only grow louder and more dissonant in the weeks and months to come. We've been asked to pause for a reality check. We've been warned against offering the people of this nation false hope. But in the unlikely story that is America, there has never been anything false about hope. For when we have faced down impossible odds, when we've been told we're not ready, or that we shouldn't try, or that we can't, generations of Americans have responded with a simple creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, you say. Yes, you say. Yes, you say. It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of a nation. Yes, you say. It was whispered by slaves and abolitionists as they blazed a trail towards freedom through the darkest of nights. Yes, you say. It was sung by immigrants as they struck out from distant shores and pioneers who pushed westward against an unforgiving wilderness. Yes, you say. It was the call of workers who organized, women who reached for the ballot, a president who chose the moon as our new frontier, and a king who took us to the mountaintop and pointed the way to the promised land. Yes, you say, to justice and equality.
Okay, there you go. Now, was that just a coincidence? Was it an accident? Is reverse speech voodoo magic? Is it a study that is just coincidental? I don't know, folks. I really don't. It appears that the odd areas of Obama's biography continue to be stacked in the direction of very weird. But moving along, right now we are facing a future that is very, very volatile because of the gun confiscation debate and the Second Amendment being stepped on, walked on, repealed, hindered, watered down, etc. As this debate continues, I have stated that I don't think we're done. It's going to take a few more very, very pivotal events. They're going to need to have another Reichstag fire, a false flag, other gun shootings that will galvanize and further divide America. And as it divides America, it's also going to divide the church, the remnant body of Christ, because there are individuals who have their opinions about it. And I'm going to be talking about those things in upcoming programs. But ladies and gentlemen, as these things happen, I want to challenge all of you to please, please make sure that the motivation of your hearts stays within the bounds of proper behavior when dealing with one another. The remnant body of Christ does not need a civil war right now. And I know that this topic, armed versus unarmed, should Christians have guns? Should they not? Shame on the Christians for doing it. Look at me. I have faith in God. Where's your faith? Why do you need a gun? I don't, etc., etc. I want to challenge you folks, please do your best to not allow yourself to become taken into those arguments that condemn the brethren. If someone wants to be a pacifist, let him be a pacifist. If someone wants to be a valiant warrior that goes down with their boots on, then allow them to do that. But please don't throw rocks, folks. If someone believes that no way, no how am I going to give up the Second Amendment, then allow them to believe that. Folks, let's look in the mirror and let's worry about ourselves. It may be possible that some of the pacifists who have innocent children may be saved by those who are extreme patriots. I know that this is a difficult topic to talk about. I know that some of you listening may at this point be undecided. Maybe you're scared. Some of you are trying to figure out in your conscience where you should stand in this whole matter. Should you be a pacifist and watch it happen, or should you have a bold declaration? And if you were to ask me, Nathan, what do you think? Should I defend myself? Is it wrong? Well, I touched that last time, but here's my breakdown. I want to say this, folks. I do not think it is wrong for the man of the house to defend himself or resist bandits, pirates, and thieves. I don't. And if anyone listening to this is bothered by me saying that, I'm sorry. But I'm not going to sit back and watch members of my family be abused or raped or ravished. I also do not think that it is wrong for an American citizen to defend themselves against invading armies or invading foreign troops sent here to harm us, to take over us. Now, folks, key words, to harm us. Now, while I am mentioning those two areas, I'll also say this. I do not think that it is possible to resist an overwhelming frontal attack by U.S. military forces, because the U.S. military is the most powerful military in the entire world, and they have weapons of the incredible kind. So if someone was faced with having to possibly encounter the U.S. military, then I would advise several things. If you want to stay alive, I would advise this. If at all possible, hide or flee or attempt to be as innocent as a dove. Nathan, what if they're showing up to take you to the camps? And that, my friends, is the thing that I'm not going to tell you what to do. You see, ladies and gentlemen, there are many decisions that we need to work on, consider, pray about. In the last program, I shared that I believe it's possible to own a gun and still trust in God because Christian police officers do it every day. By the way, as a side note, in the days that are coming when no food will longer be available, if an individual is living in a rural place, out in the woods, in open spans of land, away from populated areas, I believe that it would only be wise for those individuals to have a firearm so that they could hunt and so that they could keep predators and varmints away. Coyotes, wolves, bears, mountain lions. The gun debate is very complex, ladies and gentlemen. And saying that Christians shouldn't have guns, well, if you're living out in the woods and in the country and there's no food, how smart is that? How are you going to get a deer, or how are you going to hunt? With a bow and arrow? I guess that's possible, but as food becomes more and more scarce, folks, it does not hurt to be able to reach out and touch something for food. So I know that I'm bringing up this other topic and I don't want to waste too much time on it, but in a future program, I do want to talk about the rules of engagement, because I think that is one thing that is not being talked about. For those that are against self-defense or having a gun, there are ways to resist evil without having to use lethal force. We have to think outside of the box. And if some of you find yourself under a guilt trip because it seems that everyone around you wants you to be a pacifist, but still you don't feel right about it, then don't. And in the same way, if you do have a firearm and you feel guilty having it, then give it up if that's what you really have to do. But folks, I would say this. Between now and the time that the American catastrophe begins, you may have to relocate. You may have to move to an area that is away from people. What if you have to become a refugee? What if you have to end up in no man's land, far away? And what if you did that and then you're kicking yourself because you gave away your firearm? Now you won't be able to hunt. I have read accounts of the civil war in Yugoslavia, Kosovo, Serbia, where some of them had to hunt because they had no food, but they had limited ammo. They didn't have weapons, or they wished they did, and the people that were able to hunt were the ones that survived. So, ladies and gentlemen, this dialogue, this debate, please hear my heart. We need to be as wise as serpents. What does that mean? That means we can put ourselves in the minds of the enemy who is trying to do you harm, and consider what they would try to do to hurt you. And then we need to be able to think of a wise remedy that totally stumps them, that they did not expect. Remedies that are full of wisdom and remedies that are successful. That's the challenge that I want to leave you with, ladies and gentlemen. Well, it looks like I'm out of time now, so I want to thank you for listening. Again, folks, please remember us. If you have any comments that you want to send, you can go to my website, watchmanscry.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, have a discussion with your family members on the things we talked about here. Have the dialogue. Have the family meeting. And then present these things to God for His direction. All right, my friends? Well, God bless you. Stay safe. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.